Chapter 8 Ways and Means Part 1 If a society, a city, or a territory were to guarantee the necessaries of life to its inhabitants, and we shall see how the conception of the necessaries of life can be so extended as to include luxuries, it would be compelled to take possession of what is absolutely needed for production. That is to say, land, machinery, factories, means of transport, etc. Capital in the hands of private owners would be expropriated to be returned to the community. The great harm done by bourgeois society, as we have already mentioned, is not only that capitalists seize a large share of the profits of each industrial and commercial enterprise, thus enabling themselves to live without working, but that all production has taken a wrong direction, as it is not carried on with a view to securing well-being to all. There is the reason why it must be condemned. It is absolutely impossible that mercantile production should be carried on in the interest of all. To desire it would be to expect the capitalist to go beyond his province and to fulfil duties that he cannot fulfil without ceasing to be what he is, a private manufacturer seeking his own enrichment. Capitalist organisation, based on the personal interest of each individual employer of labour, has given to society all that could be expected of it. It has increased the productive force of labour. The capitalist, profiting by the revolution effected in industry by steam, by the sudden development of chemistry and machinery, and by other inventions of our century, has worked in his own interest to increase the yield of human labour, and in a great measure he has succeeded so far. But to attribute other duties to him would be unreasonable. For example, to expect that he should use this superior yield of labour in the interest of society as a whole would be to ask philanthropy and charity of him, and a capitalist enterprise cannot be based on charity. It now remains for society, first, to extend this greater productivity, which is limited to certain industries, and to apply it to the general good. But it is evident that to utilise this high productivity of labour so as to guarantee well-being to all, society must itself take possession of all means of production. Economists, as is their wont, will not fail to remind us of the comparative well-being of a certain category of young, robust workmen, skilled in certain special branches of industry, which has been obtained under the present system. It is always this minority that is pointed out to us with pride. But even this well-being, which is the exclusive right of a few, is it secure? Tomorrow, maybe, negligence, improvidence, or the greed of their employers will deprive these privileged men of their work, and they will pay for the period of comfort they have enjoyed with months and years of poverty or destitution. How many important industries, the textiles, iron, sugar, etc., without mentioning all sorts of short-lived trades, have we not seen decline or come to a standstill on account of speculations or in consequence of natural displacement of work, or from the effects of competition amongst the capitalists themselves? If the chief textile and mechanical industries had to pass through such a crisis as they have passed through in 1886, we hardly need mention the small trades, all of which have their periods of standstill. What, too, shall we say to the price which is paid for the relative well-being of certain categories of workmen? Unfortunately, it is paid for by the ruin of agriculture, the shameless exploitation of the peasants, the misery of the masses. In comparison with the feeble minority of workers who enjoy a certain comfort, how many millions of human beings live from hand to mouth without a secure wage, ready to go wherever they are wanted? How many peasants work 14 hours a day for a poor pittance? Capital depopulates the country, exploits the colonies and the countries where industries are but little developed, dooms the immense majority of workmen to remain without technical education, to remain mediocre even in their own trade. This is not merely accidental, it is a necessity of the capitalist system. In order well to remunerate certain classes of workmen, peasants must become the beasts of burden of society. The country must be deserted for the town. Small trades must agglomerate in the foul suburbs of large cities and manufacture a thousand little things for next to nothing so as to bring the goods of the greater industries within reach of buyers with small salaries. That bad cloth may be sold to ill-paid workers. Garments are made by tailors who are satisfied with a starvation wage. Eastern lands in a backward state are exploited by the West in order that under the capitalist system, workers in a few privileged industries may obtain certain limited comforts of life. The evil of the present system is therefore not that the surplus value of production goes to the capitalist, as Rodbertus and Marx said, thus narrowing the socialist conception and the general view of the capitalist system. The surplus value itself is but a consequence of deeper causes. The evil lies in the possibility of a surplus value existing, instead of a simple surplus not consumed by each generation. For that a surplus value should exist means that men, women, and children are compelled by hunger to sell their labour for a small part of what this labour produces, and still more so of what their labour is capable of producing. But this evil will last as long as the instruments of production belong to the few. As long as men are compelled to pay a heavy tribute to property holders for the right of cultivating land or putting machinery into action, and the owners of the land and the machine are free to produce what bids fair to bring them in the largest profits, rather than the greatest amount of useful commodities, well-being can only be temporarily guaranteed to a very few. It is only to be bought by the poverty of a large section of society. It is not sufficient to distribute the profits realized by a trade in equal parts if at the same time thousands of other workers are exploited. It is a case of producing the greatest amount of goods necessary to the well-being of all, with the least possible waste of human energy. This generalized aim cannot be the aim of a private owner. And this is why society as a whole, if it takes this view of production as its ideal, will be compelled to expropriate all that enhances well-being while producing wealth. It will have to take possession of land, factories, mines, means of communication, etc. And besides, it will have to study what products will promote general well-being, as well as the ways and means of an adequate production. Part 2. How many hours a day will man have to work to produce nourishing food, a comfortable home, and necessary clothing for his family? This question has often preoccupied socialists, and they generally come to the conclusion that 4 or 5 hours a day would suffice, on condition, be it well understood, that all men work. At the end of last century, Benjamin Franklin fixed the limit at 5 hours. And if the need of comfort is greater now, the power of production has augmented too, and far more rapidly. In speaking of agriculture further on, we shall see what the earth can be made to yield to man when he cultivates it in a reasonable way, instead of throwing seed haphazard in a badly ploughed soil as he mostly does today. In the great farms of Western America, some of which cover 30 square miles, but have a poorer soil than the manured soil of civilized countries, only 10 to 15 English bushels per English acre are obtained. That is to say, half the yield of European farms or of American farms in the eastern states. And, nevertheless, thanks to machines which enable 2 men to plough 4 English acres a day, 100 men can produce in a year all that is necessary to deliver the bread of 10,000 people at their homes during a whole year. Thus, it would suffice for a man to work under the same conditions for 30 hours, say 6 half-days of 5 hours each, to have bread for a whole year, and to work 30 half-days to guarantee the same to a family of 5 people. We shall also prove by results obtained nowadays that if we took recourse to intensive agriculture, less than 6 half-days' work could procure bread, meat, vegetables, and even luxurious fruit for a whole family. Again, if we study the cost of workmen's dwellings, built in large towns today, we can ascertain that to obtain, in a large English city, a semi-detached little house, as they're built for workmen, for £250, From 1400 to 1800, half day's work of 5 hours would be sufficient. And as a house of that kind lasts 50 years at least, it follows that 28 to 36 half day's work a year would provide well-furnished, healthy quarters with all necessary comfort for a family. Whereas, when hiring the same apartment from an employer, a workman pays from 75 to 100 days' work per year. Mark that these figures represent the maximum of what a house costs in England today, being given the defective organisation of our societies. In Belgium, workmen's houses in the Cité Ouvrière have been built at a much smaller cost, so that, taking everything into consideration, we are justified in affirming that in a well-organised society, 30 or 40 half-days' work a year will suffice to guarantee a perfectly comfortable home. There now remains clothing, the exact value of which is almost impossible to fix, because the profits realised by a swarm of middlemen cannot be estimated. Let us take cloth, for example, and add up all the tribute levied on every yard of it by the landowners, the sheep owners, the wool merchants, and all their intermediate agents, then by the railway companies, mill owners, weavers, dealers in ready-made clothes, sellers and commission agents, and we shall then get an idea of what we pay to a whole swarm of capitalists for each article of clothing. That is why it is perfectly impossible to say how many days' work an overcoat that you pay £3 or £4 for in a large London shop represents. What is certain is that with present machinery, it is possible to manufacture an incredible amount of goods both cheaply and quickly. A few examples will suffice. Thus, in the United States, in 751 cotton mills for spinning and weaving, 175,000 men and women produce 2,033,000,000 yards of cotton goods, besides a great quantity of thread. On the average, more than 12,000 yards of cotton goods alone are obtained by 300 days' work of 9 1/2 hours each, say 40 yards of cotton in 10 hours. Admitting that a family needs 200 yards a year at most, this would be equivalent to 50 hours' work, say 10 half-days of 5 hours each, and we should have thread besides, that is to say, cotton to sew with, and thread to weave cloth with, so as to manufacture woolen stuffs mixed with cotton. As to the results obtained by weaving alone, the official statistics of the United States teach us that in 1870, if workmen worked 13 or 14 hours a day, they made 10,000 yards of white cotton goods in a year. 16 years later, 1886, they wove 30,000 yards by working only 55 hours a week. Even in printed cotton goods, they obtained, weaving and printing included, 32,000 yards in 2,670 hours of work a year, say about 12 yards an hour. Thus, to have your 200 yards of white and printed cotton goods, 17 hours work a year would suffice. It is necessary to remark that raw material reaches these factories in about the same state as it comes from the fields, and that the transformations gone through by the piece before it is converted into goods are completed in the course of these 17 hours. But to buy these 200 yards from the tradesman, a well-paid workman must give at the very least 10 to 15 days' work of 10 hours each, say 100 to 150 hours. And as to the English peasant, he would have to toil for a month or a little more to obtain this luxury. By this example, we already see that by working 50 half-days per year in a well-organised society, we could dress better than the lower middle classes do today. But with all this, we have only required 60 half-days' work of 5 hours each to obtain the fruits of the earth, 40 for housing and 50 for clothing, which only makes half a year's work, as the year consists of 300 working days if we deduct holidays. There remain still 150 half-days' work which could be made use of for other necessaries of life. Wine, sugar, coffee, tea, furniture, transport, etc., etc. It is evident that these calculations are only approximative, but they can also be proved in another way. When we take into account how many in the so-called civilized nations produce nothing, how many work at harmful trades doomed to disappear, and lastly, how many are only useless middlemen, we see that in each nation the number of real producers could be doubled. And if, instead of every 10 men, 20 were occupied in producing useful commodities, and if society took the trouble to economize human energy, those 20 people would only have to work 5 hours a day without production decreasing. And it would suffice to reduce the waste of human energy which is going on in the rich families with the scores of useless servants, or in the administrations which occupy one official to every 10 or even 6 inhabitants, and to utilize those forces to augment immensely the productivity of a nation. In fact, work could be reduced to 4 or even 3 hours a day to produce all the goods that are produced now. After studying all these facts together, we may arrive then at the following conclusion. Imagine a society comprising a few million inhabitants, engaged in agriculture and a great variety of industries. Paris, for example, with the Département of Seine-et-Oise. Suppose that in this society, all children learn to work with their hands as well as with their brains. Admit that all adults, save women, engage in the education of their children, bind themselves to work 5 hours a day from the age of 20 or 22 to 45 or 50, and that they follow occupations they have chosen themselves in any one of those branches of human work which in this city are considered necessary. Such a society could in return guarantee well-being to all its members, a well-being more substantial than that enjoyed today by the middle classes. And moreover, each worker belonging to this society would have at his disposal at least 5 hours a day which he could devote to science, art and individual needs which do not come under the category of necessities, but will probably do so later on when man's productivity will have augmented and those objects will no longer appear luxurious or inaccessible.